You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
That is the result of His Majesty's government.
You're listening to The Wire.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
In Wellington, failure at the Moore Point wastewater treatment plant has led to millions of litres of wastewater being sent into the Cook Strait. The incident has shed light on what scientific experts have been saying for years, that water infrastructure in New Zealand is out of date and incapable of handling the growing effect of climate challenges without deeper investment. The Salvation Army released their State of the Nation report, which has found an increase in issues across the justice system, child welfare and poverty contributing to declining social equality in Aotearoa. As well, New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters is campaigning on a referendum on Māori seats in New Zealand Parliament. This week, I spoke to National MP Ryan Hamilton about all of these topics, starting with Moore Point. Experts have been warning the government about the urgent need for investment into water infrastructure for years. Why hasn't there thus far been the necessary upgrades and investment despite these calls?
Well, obviously, wastewater and the three waters issue generally has been a big topic of discussion over the last sort of 6 to 8 years, I suppose, under both governments. We felt and certainly got a mandate in the last election that the previous administration's three waters proposal wasn't what communities wanted. It was sort of a top-down approach. You remember it was initially four entities and then it sort of morphed into 10 entities, and it was complex and it involved co-governance and a lot of ambiguity. And so obviously through the election we campaigned on an alternative approach, and that's now been largely accepted and embedded across New Zealand. So that's local water done well. And from mid this year we'll start to see the effects of that transition play out across councils where they're needing to provide, and they have in many cases already a 30-year infrastructure plan and a method of addressing these deficits, because I guess a lot of councils around the country for a variety of reasons have sweated those assets or just not actually addressed or kicked the can down the roads in terms of maintaining them and also keeping up with growth demands. So fortunately, with local water done well kicking in, we're going to see a lot more transparency and robust asset investment, obviously, up and down the country.
I mean, to that regard, what lessons will the government be taking forward from this incident to ensure that Kiwis are protected health-wise and to ensure that we can prevent future similar events?
Yeah, well, this obviously is really disappointing. I mean, it was, I think, one of the only two projects in New Zealand that used an IFF levy. So it's a special targeted rate to try and fund the infrastructure, but then to see it actually not keep up in a sort of an interim crisis, and to understand there's been a lot of damage, is incredibly frustrating. So we've announced that there would be an inquiry into what caused it, what went wrong, what could we take, you know, what are the learnings we can take from that and apply that around the country, which is obviously very timely as we roll out the Local Water Done Well program across the country. But I think we're going to have a lot more visibility and transparency across our water infrastructure now in New Zealand, both at a local central government level, but also in terms of community, so they'll see where their money's going and what it's going for, because there has been massive underinvestment, and I think now we've seen potentially about $9 billion needs to be spent over the next 10 years to try and get it up to a level that's sustainable and can handle capacity and growth.
Can New Zealanders expect this necessary level of investment going forward, especially relating to how we as a country can step up our climate commitments?
Yeah, I mean, we have to. I mean, obviously, like I was saying, with the program that's in place, there's going to be a lot more transparency around those assets. So drinking water, stormwater and wastewater. We've got to be a lot more transparent and robust. Obviously, wastewater and drinking water has to meet, you know, strict compliance and consistency standards. And those standards have varied all over the country, and that's been one of the challenges as well, with different councils requiring different levels of, you know, engineering compliance or pipe certification. And so part of the whole rollout is much more standardisation. So engineers, you know, district or territorial authorities have more consistency around the type of infrastructure required, what the standards are, and then apply them. And then obviously with stormwater, that's a huge issue ongoing, and especially in these wild weather events which we're seeing, we've got to be able to have clarity. And I think that also fits into the work we're doing around the climate adaption framework and being more smarter in terms of regional nuance and understanding. You know, with stormwater, it's not always one size fits all, because there's a lot of work that goes into local catchment groups and understanding water flows and those sorts of things. So it's a big program of works, and it's going to take some time, but I think by separating the governance and the infrastructure investment, the finances required around this piece of New Zealand infrastructure, at least we're going to have a lot more clarity and ability to address those changing and growing needs.
On my next topic, the Salvation Army published their State of the Nation report. Among the findings, they've said child poverty gains have reversed, rough sleepers have doubled in Auckland, 90,000 young people are left outside work, education or training. What do you make of this report, and what is the National Party's response going to be towards it?
Yeah, obviously those things are a constant work on for any government. And if you look over some of those statistics over the last 10 years, they don't fluctuate as much as they might in any given year. But we're really passionate about improving the housing situation for all Kiwis. And obviously we're trying to change some of the fundamental programs around housing in New Zealand. And that, if you take a macro view for a moment, obviously the RMA and Fast Track and those sorts of big pieces of legislation are all about enabling more housing so we can get more abundant supplies, more density, more typology. And even with Kāinga Ora, for example, you know, a lot of the demand for state housing was for 1 and 2 bedroom houses. I think it was nearly 50% required 1 and 2 bedroom houses, but the organisation was only producing 12% of 1 and 2 bedroom houses. So there's been a big reset in terms of KO and the typology that they're putting out, and then obviously some of the governance and financial situation around that as well. But on more of a street level, as you know, many rough sleepers and those in homeless situations, they're often coupled with mental health, high and complex needs, addiction. And so it's not simply often a question of putting them in a house. It's making sure that they've got the wraparound support and networks around them that go with that. And Housing First has been a really successful model. And late last year, in fact, I met with the WISE Group and the People's Project in Hamilton with Minister Bishop and Minister Pōtaka, and it was a very good meeting, and they talked to us about how we'd had great success around some of the emergency housing and hotels, but now I guess the next cab off the rank was some of the rough sleeping and homeless, and they really put forward a case around investment in Housing First. And and so shortly after that, there was a big commitment from the government for 300 additional Housing First homes. And from what we can understand, there's already been a significant uptake in those houses, which is great. I think 199 lease agreements signed and 168 new tenancies are already underway across Auckland, Hamilton, Wellington and Christchurch. So that's very much a work on, but something we're taking seriously, but working with those providers that have the ability to obviously not just house physically, but provide the, you know, emotional and well-being supports around the total order of those individuals.
With regard to some of these negative statistics, do you think that they can be perhaps attributed to ineffective policies or decisions made in the past few years by the National Party? Or is there something else that you think is responsible here, I suppose, for what we're seeing in terms of the increase in social inequality in New Zealand?
I think these challenges have always been there. And, you know, as I mentioned before, on some of the graphs on the Salvation Army reports, they go back over 10 years, and you can see it's really hard to move the needle in some of those spaces over time. So it is really a case of taking a long-term view and mixing that with, you know, the macro challenges around productivity in this country, around housing, and we're trying to unlock some of that stuff, which will take a while to flow through, but that can create an abundance of housing supply. And then at the more, you know, micro level, what are we doing around supporting those NGOs that have feet on the ground now and are working really hard to support those families. And then, you know, there's a whole lot of work we've done through the budget targeting our child and youth strategy, which is, you know, we've got a strategy to reduce material hardship to 11% over this year in 2027. So that's very much a focus of that. And such things like investment in Kids Can, Kickstart through our social investment fund will start to contribute to those families. And obviously also in Budget 24, we had a tax bracket adjustment, which was the first time in 14 years. So the take-home money was slightly more for working Kiwis. But also we increased the in-work tax credit up to $50 a fortnight for working families with children as well, which is, you know, supporting an estimated 160,000 more families through that minimum family tax credit. So it's a lot of work to do. And certainly, you know, by no means are we there. But we're very cognizant of these, you know, these social issues in our community, and we're pulling as many levers as we can. But it takes a long time to get that implementation. But I'm pleased we've got, you know, a specific social investment agency which is trying to make that investment holistically across a range of government and community outreach, I guess.
My final topic, just quickly, Winston Peters is calling for a referendum on Māori seats based on their limited democratic influence, as well as the behaviour of the Māori Party recently. Rāwiri Waititi says the seats are historically significant and a constitutional, not conditional, element of Māori representation. What is the National Party's stance on this issue?
Well, as you know, and we've talked about, we know with our coalition partners, they're free to express their party's views, and obviously they'll be testing the community coming into an election year. I don't have any personal view on that. We haven't had a chance as a caucus to discuss that, so that'll be something that we will be talking about in due course.
If the National Party and NZ First are coalition partners again, is this something that is likely to be put forward in the next term?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see where it all lands and how the votes turn out. But I'm sure there'll be lots of things to work through with our partners.
That was National Party MP Ryan Hamilton talking about Māori seats, the state of social inequality in Aotearoa, and wastewater infrastructure and investment.
That was our weekly chat with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
And I wish some of your dozy mates in the media had got a fix on their job and started being reporters and journalists, not editorialists and analysts, which they're not qualified to do. Prison company accepted, of course.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.